Before Ira Solomon's private kingdom of books fell under siege, the elderly bookseller was a happy man. He was a loyal husband, a loving father of two daughters and one son, and a doting grandfather of half a dozen grandchildren. His multi-generational family was the North Star of his golden years that was only rivaled by his passion for literature. Founded over half a century ago, Solomon Books was part fiefdom and part family-run business, with Ira at the calm center of this book-lined universe. As the patriarch and defender of the written word, Ira embraced his calling with the fervor of an Old Testament zealot. He opened the shop every morning at 9 a.m. like clockwork. Rain or shine, you could set your watch to his punctuality. Every day, he put out the welcome mat and greeted his customers with a smile and a short remark about the news of the day. The old man was more than the proprietor of the tiny bookshop. Beloved by his children and his loyal customers alike, Ira was the keeper of the flame for sacred stories. His books enriched the lives of his extended family of fellow book lovers who filed through his front door seeking sustenance for hungry minds and souls. Ira knew his regular customers by name, and he made recommendations to newcomers who wandered into the shop out of curiosity. He believed that the right customers would arrive in due time to claim them. As a matchmaker for books, he believed each volume had a reader waiting for it out in the world. Stubborn to the last, Ira demanded that Solomon Books stay within the family. To safeguard this decree, he raised his children to respect and care for books as sacred objects. They admired his reverence for his shop and grew to love it too. Amidst the neatly packed bookshelves, comfy easy chairs were tucked away in well-lit corners, and a chessboard waited for weary travelers near the back. Solomon Books was their sanctuary that they would one day inherit. Like their father, they lived within walking distance or a short drive away. His daughters, Marnie and Marcia, and his only son, Andre, were his employees, his grandchildren trailing not far behind as youthful apprentices weaned on chapter books and comics. When Ira immigrated to the United States, he clung to the thin hope of leaving behind memories of war in the old world. He never spoke of the faded serial number tattooed on his left arm. Ira hid those six digits from another lifetime, strangled with barbed wire beneath his long-sleeved shirts. At night, however, it was a different story. His dreams shuddered and quaked with the memory of gray-uniformed soldiers and burnt offerings of crematoriums. Deep in slumber, his skin sweated as if from the heat of ovens running day and night. In his fever dreams, smoke plumes eclipsed the sun and blackened the sky. His wife, Lila, had grown accustomed to his night terrors and often slept through these episodes without incident. A solid marriage demanded a good night's sleep and a willingness to accept one another as works in progress. During the day, Ira was grounded in the present at home with his menagerie of books. Even before the great migration of letters shook the reading capitals of the literate world to their core, Ira proudly looked down his nose at the trends and hurdles of a declining readership. he defiantly stood his ground as more and more readers abandoned the tactile pleasures of books for the electronic firelight of tablets. Even his grandchildren were drawn to screens small enough to fit in the palms of their tiny hands. Ira was the fierce defender of printed pages against a deluge of cascading pixels, luring eyes away from the creature comforts of his cozy cave of cracked bindings and classic titles promising adventure and drama in imaginary lands. Ira could not help but laugh nervously when people labeled the encroaching technology as progress. One man's progress was another man's death march into oblivion. The elderly bookseller hated to think of his shop sliding into extinction like a broken-backed dinosaur destined for the tar pits of obsolescence. Ira was a true bibliophile who was fearful of being stranded on an island of pictures divorced from words. The future was inevitable. Tomorrow stormed through their lives, tripping over furniture and spilling drinks and rudely interrupting conversations with mindless chatter of speed and efficiency. Time waited for no one, especially not a quiet old man who loved to read the old-fashioned way. Ira knew in his heart that there was no substitute for holding a long-cherished tome in his hands. And each book reciprocated by embracing him with words and strange fancies, daydreams of strangers who found an audience across the gulf of time and space. The great migration of letters arrived without warning. It was a black day for booksellers everywhere. Notes flew away at their own accord. Soon, letters secretly slipped out of their envelopes and licked them closed again to cover their tracks. The chaos was contagious. While in transit, postcards made speedy getaways from tourist traps to faraway destinations of their choice. Not to be outdone, bookmarks took flight, pledging to never again be squeezed and discarded between paper-thin walls of text. The phenomenon spread like wildfire. The multilingual flocks of books, magazines, newspapers, letters, and memos left writers and publishers in fits of panic. Librarians lamented the airborne harbingers of liberated stories birthed from stillborn printing presses, wet with ink and their users' worry. In the center of this prose-driven bedlam, Ira opened his shop as he always did. Despite his children's training, from diapers to dictionaries, the younger bibliophiles of the Solomon family grew increasingly worried as the incidents escalated. There was no escaping the growing anxiety when encyclopedias revolt and dart for the exit. They said such things could not happen. It was the stuff of fantasy and fairy tales. Until the great migration of letters became a pandemic, afflicting reading material everywhere. As a lifelong reader, Ira was committed to protecting his volumes, compiled over half a lifetime. The self-described bookworm extraordinaire was determined to prevent his beloved books from departing for destinations unknown. In this not-so-brave new world of rogue letters, various forms of written correspondence dive-bombed into combat, dogfights of flying prose dueled with lofty poetry, rising like hot balloons above the fray of ordinary life. Postcards engaged in aerial ballets above post offices, staking their daring claim in neutral airspace. Puzzled and amused, onlookers gazed up at the screaming sky, ringing out with a machine gun chatter of disembodied words soaring above. Ira's adult children gazed out the shop's front window to read the strange skywriting from angry and restless parchment, spitting letters against the blue firmament. They scratched their collective heads and whispered amongst themselves. However, the old bookseller's grandchildren were delighted to see the alphabet soaring above their heads, letters spontaneously rearranging into new sentences and phrases. For them, these strange outbursts unfolded with an engrossing story, writing itself across the dome of the sky for their eyes only. Sunday sermons by pastors spoke of end times. Judgment Day was a topic of everyone's gossip, lingering like a tart aftertaste, bitter and always present. Men and women of the cloth preached to flocks of devout worshipers as if they were witnesses to a cosmic game of Scrabble played by God and a mischievous host of angels. Soon, Bibles and hymn books joined forces with ancient copies of the Quran and the Torah in a mass exodus. The words of God in his many guises slipped away as a priest whispered Ecclesiastes 12:12. But beyond this, my son, be warned. The writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearing to the body. Freelance exorcists were summoned to drive away any trace of necromancy from the packed, standing room only houses of God. Soon, these absurd acts of resistance by rebellious written words became everyday occurrences. Handwritten homework assignments plotted daring escapes from the desk of procrastinating students. Essays folded and transformed themselves into self-made paper airplanes, slipping out of open windows in attack formation. This uncanny turn of events left book lovers on high alert. Everyone took notice of their emptying bookshelves and the absence of reading material in bathrooms everywhere triggered shockwaves of worry. There was no turning back from the written word's stealthy departure. Bookstore owners and their customers did their best to persevere. In bookshops, large and small, managers and clerks alike built small gilded cages for prized illuminated manuscripts. Ingenious barricades were fashioned out of bookshelves. Shipping boxes became holding pens forged out of necessity. The fate of Ira and his cabal of offspring was no exception. There was no denying that the great migration of letters disrupted their world, tipping over this sanctuary of novels and nonfiction into chaos. The Solomon clan's livelihood was thrown into jeopardy. Solomon Book's efforts in a new art of book catching were futile gestures. When a book wanted to be in the wild, there was nothing to stop it. Adventurous books evaded temporary booby traps and dodged obstacles at will. The focused resolve of once inanimate objects now in motion and yearning for freedom was a formidable foe for shopkeepers everywhere. Books and magazines, pamphlets and newsletters, awoke to bouts of self-consciousness and dreamt about themselves. They basked in their newfound ability to stretch and breathe, and finally to fly. What was a family of booksellers to do when the once earthbound world of literature was turned upside down by an uprising of suddenly conscious reading material? Ira's cherished shrine to storytelling shook and quaked with unruly books. They wanted out, to be liberated from the bookshelves. From this chaotic conundrum, magazines fluttered their colorful pages and jostled for a better position to bolt for the outside world. No magazine rack was designed to hold publications that were willing to seize the reins of liberation by any means necessary. One day, in the midst of the book fleeing mutiny, the kindly bookseller noticed his favorite book was missing. The slender volume of fairy tales and magic had opened on its own and inched its way to the corner of his desk. The pages turned back and forth, stretching its pages yellow with age. The moment of the book's awakening rushed into glorious clarity and focus. At first, the sentient book reminded Ira of an exotic bird perched on the edge of its mother's nest. Flapping its paper wings for the first time, the slender volume lifted off his desk and circled the room. It bumped into a lamp, yet kept navigating around the furniture in the dimly lit interior. Finally, the book spotted an open door and glided to the front of the store. Paper wings grazed against nearly empty bookshelves. The book flew past the glass doors of a cabinet filled with bound texts too old and brittle to move. With an abrupt crash, the book slammed into the shop's front window and dropped to the welcome mat. A few torn and loose pages floated to the ground, collateral damage from the book's maiden flight. Leaning on his cane for support, Ira walked to the front entrance with its bolted doors. At his feet, the wounded book jumped across the tiled floor. Ira bent down on one knee and touched the nervous book. His fingers stroked the cover, and the tome calmed to his touch. They knew each other well. Carefully, Ira picked up the small book, inscribed by his father, who was long gone. He carried the volume back to his desk. The old bookseller returned to the front and once again got down on his hands and knees to retrieve the loose pages. One by one, he collected the brittle pages scattered before him. With a true book lover's care, he carried the stack to his office and closed the door. Behind his office's closed doors, he felt safe within the room's private, hermetically sealed biosphere of fiction and nonfiction, poetry and biographies that gave him a lifetime of pleasure and comfort. Ira opened the book and found where the missing pages belonged. With his wrinkled hands, he carefully glued each page back into its rightful place. He mended the book to the best of his ability. Tentative at first, the book, with his father's handwritten note to his young son, opened itself. Pages slowly turned one after another, as if caught in the draft of an invisible breeze. Somehow, Ira knew what he had to do. He cradled the book in the palms of his arthritic hands. His fingertips were permanently stained with faded ink of countless books stretching back to his childhood. With his ink-kissed fingers, the bookseller pushed open a small window at the back of his office. A cool breeze blew in. Ira imagined the scent of faraway shores, bidding farewell to immigrants and refugees searching for safe harbor at Ellis Island and other ports of entry. Ira inhaled the fresh rush of air and smiled. Before he knew it, the book jumped from the palm of his hand onto the windowsill. He pushed the window open wider. Before he could say goodbye, the book took flight. The volume caught the swell of gusting air and lifted higher and higher on its flapping pages. Its cracked binding held. Ira thought he heard the book cry out with something approaching bliss. The elderly bookseller watched the book recede into the distance. He imagined the bounty of tales making its way to paradise. It was an amusing thought, something to make his grandchildren laugh one day. The book was gone. Ira's smile faded. It was meant to be. Someplace over the rainbow and beyond the visible horizon, perhaps stories are free to find their own readers after all. Maybe, Ira thought, the book would find some stranger waiting for adventure and discovery. A new freedom beckoned, and Ira's favorite book answered its call as best it could. That night, Ira was freed from the terrors that had followed him to the new world. Without explanation, the fever dream stopped. From that moment forward, Ira Solomon, veteran and witness of the great migration of letters, slept like a newborn baby.